minute. So, good morning, everybody, or afternoon, as the case may be. Welcome to the Business Trust Call. Today is February 17th, 2018. I would like to let you know that we, meaning my colleague Jim and I, are not gurus. We're not attorneys. We're not tax professionals. We're not currency traders. We're not anything like that, but we do want to talk to you about business trust because we feel that the business trust is the best way to protect this asset that you hope to have very, very soon. And as far as Jim, he is getting stronger every day. He's still got some balance issues and a little bit of fatigue, but he's come right along. So we are going to go through some prepared questions, and we have some Q&A. And today I have my friend Judy giving me a hand here with some of these questions. Judy, are you there? Oh, I have to unmute you, honey. Hang on. Okay, Judy, you should be there. There you are.
I am here.
Okay, so anyway, we're apparently so close to this RV. You know, every day we hear more and more about dates and rates, 800 numbers, et cetera. And even with the best of intentions, many of these sites are stating that no one knows the actual date or rate of the RV. I mean, the calls in the last few days have been amazing. Everybody thinks that we are knocking on the door, so we can only pray that so. We recently have heard this will not be a taxable event on any state or federal levels. However, I don't have any confirmation of that yet. But until we know for sure in writing, I, for one, plan to put 50% aside for taxes this year. We have the money to cover it. If not, we have a bonus. But until the official rules of engagement are made known, we recommend setting all these rumors aside. We do suggest that you do what you need to do now to be ready for the event, which, you know, hopefully could be in a few days. So, Judy, are you ready to start?
I am, Carol. So, Carol, what is a trust?
Well, a trust is a fiduciary arrangement that allows a third party or trustee to hold assets on behalf of another. As one of my clients has put it, a trust is a contract with assets given or exchanged by agreement for established planning.
So, Carol, why do we establish a trust rather than continue owning our currency in our own name and Social Security number?
That's a good question because a lot of people say, well, why don't I just wait till afterwards and, you know, then put it all into a trust? Owning anything in your own name and social leaves your assets exposed. And this is a wild supposition, but suppose after you exchange your currency, you're so excited you have a heart attack and die. All that money becomes probate fodder and open to estate and inheritance taxes. The assets could be tied up in court for years, and your family may not see any of it for a very long time, if at all. Another scenario, you're in an automobile accident and some hungry attorneys see you as the meal ticket. On the other hand, if you exchange into a properly crafted trust, then have an accident or heart attack on the way home, the assets remain in the trust with no probate or estate taxes. It will be managed by the successor trustees that you previously named.
Okay, well, that's okay. I understand that. So should I go to an attorney or a bank for the trust?
Well, you know, that may seem like a good idea, but it's not really the best option. Typically, any trust you get from an attorney or a bank will be a statutory grantor trust, the most common being the revocable living trust, which a lot of people have heard of. However, that's really not the best way to go.
Do you have a better option?
I do. Most.
I knew you were going to say that.
Most other trusts are statutory in nature, meaning they get their power and strength from locally, usually state-enacted laws. They're often recorded in that state or county, thus you have no privacy. They're sometimes required to pay a state recording fee every year. A statutory trust is a privilege granted by statute and regulated by the laws of the states in which it was created. A business trust, which is what we're here to talk about today, is actually a contract and trust format. The right to contract is guaranteed by Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, which is a common law contract itself. When researching the two, but business trust or trust, you won't even find business trust in the T section of the law library, but in the B as in boy section.
Wow. So why are the business trusts so ideal in managing versus personally owning assets?
Well, let's go back up a little bit. There's other kind of trusts. Business trusts, we feel, superior. The one that we use is creature common law. It gets its power and benefit from the U.S. Constitution.
Okay.
Most states require recordation only if the trust is actively involved in commerce. This guarantees your privacy and you don't have any annual recording fees.
Okay.
The bottom line is quite simple. It's a matter of rights versus privilege. Why should we restrict the operation of our businesses to the territory granted by legislative privilege when it's really not necessary? We have a right to contract. We have a right to do this. And so we feel it's so ideal because the contract trust allows you to be the trustee of your own trust.
Okay.
Go ahead, Judy.
I was going to say the business trust contract allows you to be the trustee of your own trust.
Correct.
I think that's a powerful statement.
It is, because not very many other people can say that.
Right.
I mean, you retain full management, control, and benefits of the assets of the trust. To put it simply, there's no one between you and your money.
I like that.
Yeah. At the creation of the business trust, you irrevocably exchange your assets, in this case your currency, into the business trust. You no longer own them, but you have complete autonomy in managing them. You don't own the assets, so no one can take them from you, which is, you know, prime directive in estate planning. Own nothing, manage everything.
Right, exactly. Many people have asked about being their own trustee. Is that legal?
Yes, it is, and it's because business trust is not a statutory trust, which forbids you to be your own trustee, but it's a contract.
Right, that's the whole key.
Yeah. But to determine what you can and cannot do, look within the four corners of the contract.
Okay. So what's the difference between an irrevocable and a revocable trust?
A revocable trust can be changed or terminated or revoked at any time. Because of this, the IRS may invoke the clawback provision, putting your assets back into your estate where they could be added to your personal estate for taxation. So it's a very important tax consideration.
Yes, I see that. I understand that.
Irrevocable means the terms of the trust cannot be changed. No one can force you to revoke the trust to pay someone else. It effectively gives you an empty pockets persona. The most significant distinctions between revocable and irrevocable trusts are estate tax considerations. Property that you place in an irrevocable trust is no longer considered part of your estate, meaning that the property typically isn't included in your estate's value when it comes to determine if your estate owes death taxes, and if so, how much. It also avoids probate issues, which are a big thing.
So, Carol, why aren't banks and attorneys and CPAs more familiar with this business trust?
I mean, that's a really good question, because a lot of people say to me, well, I think I need to take this to my attorney, or I think I need to take this to my CPA, and then they come back, well, they don't know anything about it.
Right, well, and then they poo-poo it.
Yes, because that's what they do, right? They don't know anything about it, so therefore it's bad.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, you know, as I mentioned, business trusts are common law. And common law is rarely taught in our colleges and universities anymore. However, I mean, some attorneys are aware of the Massachusetts Business Trust, which is the basis of this trust, but once in place, they make no money from them. And you know, it's been said that a file cabinet full of revocable living trusts are the attorney's retirement.
Right, exactly. So what will the business be of my business trust?
Well, I'm going to let you answer that one, Judy. What do you think the business of your business trust is?
Well, I from you teaching me over the years, it's estate planning.
And it's that simple. It's estate planning. You're not going to establish a store. You're not going to do an internet business. You're not establishing trade with anybody. You are setting this up for estate planning, especially in regards with this currency.
Right. So who owns the assets of the business trust?
The business trust owns the assets in fee simple.
Okay.
The full title, both legal and equitable, to the entire trust estate is vested in the trustees. This means that the property that was once yours is now protected from personal liabilities, probate, and estate tax. So while it's no longer yours to own, it's still longer yours to enjoy as if you still owned it.
And to manage.
And to manage, yes.
Excellent. So do we want to ask questions or do we want to keep going?
Okay, we can give it a shot for questions for a moment. Okay, and we do have one ready. Let's see, where would we go? I see where. Okay, wireless caller. Let's see, we have a number here. Area code 702.
That's Nevada.
Yes, area code 702. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can now.
Okay, I had my phone muted. This is my first time calling, and I had talked to Carol, I believe, Thursday. My name is Marilyn, and there is something going on with the phones, the cell phones and the emails. I never received your email in regards to you actually doing a business trust for me. My question is, I used your information, email address, and I sent you something yesterday. So I don't know if you got it or not.
I'll have to check this again. I mean, I've had a number of people that are usually on this call that are not on here, so I'm concerned.
Right.
Emails
Right. Okay. So at any rate, my question was, I had asked you about doing a business trust for a nonprofit, and you said that there, I don't know if that would be appropriate or tricky, or and I also wanted to know, maybe it's not necessarily called a business trust, but maybe it's a foundation. I don't know the ins and outs of that. So, but you said that you know, it can be done, but it's kind of like a tricky thing or something.
Well, you know, I remember answering your email. And I can create a business trust for you that's set up to be a charitable trust. But I do not do the whole 501c application because it's lengthy and it's very time consuming. There are people out there that do that.
No. This is already an established nonprofit. It's not something that's in the mix right now.
Oh, okay. You know, all right.
Yeah, I already... The 501c3 has been established for, like, since 2004.
Oh, okay. Then that's no problem whatsoever. That's not a problem.
Okay. Now,
I'm doing that.
The designation of the entity. Yeah, that's all.
Okay. And believe it or not, right now, I was in a car accident with the property of the church, the truck from the church, and... I'm being sued for over the amount of our insurance. And so I'm thinking, would a business trust take care of that kind of thing, like to protect the assets of the church itself?
Okay, you were in an automobile accident. Were you at fault? Oh, yeah. But so
yes, I was. Yes, okay. I was at fault.
Now you've got two issues here. You've got the property of the church, which should be okay if it's already a 501c3, but if they're going after you personally... Everything you own is at risk.
They're not going after me yet, personally. This is kind of like a new thing. But it is, they're asking for over the limits of our insurance.
Of the church? Or you?
Yes. Of our car insurance, which is a commercial policy.
Okay, so well, as I said, and I mean, this is getting into areas I don't normally get into on these kind of calls.
But, oh, I'm sorry. No.
Just hang on. Let me get through this.
Okay.
If somebody is going after you personally and it's over the limits of your insurance, they can take whatever the judge or whomever tells them that you owe them. However, if your personal property was in a trust, a business trust, the judge cannot say, pay them. It's an irrevocable trust. The trust owns the asset. You do not. It would be like going to your neighbor and telling them to pay them. So by putting your assets in a business trust, an irrevocable business trust, because nobody can take them away from you. And that's one of the examples we use all the time. You're in an automobile accident. Damages are more than the limits of your insurance policy. Nobody can go after you personally because you don't own anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Perfect sense. But
so it's not the church that needs the trust. It's you personally.
Yes.
Okay, but see, since it's a nonprofit, I'm thinking they could come after the church for the church's assets or for the nonprofit's assets.
I don't know, but as I said, Marilyn, those are areas I don't typically get into.
You need a good lawyer.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, that's way over.
Yeah, what type of attorney would I need? Would I need a trust attorney or a business corporate attorney?
How is the church structured now? What kind of entity is it?
It is a corporation, and we do have a board of directors.
Yeah, you need a good corporate attorney.
A corporate attorney, okay.
You probably
All
have
right.
a church that's a lawyer.
Yeah. Okay. We've got. Oh, you know, I've got another caller, and I know this guy's an accountant, so he might be able to help with this.
Oh, maybe that's why he's chiming in.
Yeah, maybe. Good morning, William. Thank you for joining us today. William, are you there? William.
William. Star six.
Well, he looks like he's on his headphones, but we'll see. Anyway, if he comes back in, we'll let him speak. In the meantime, I don't have anything else. Anybody else waiting for questions? Do you want to continue for a little bit, Judy, and then we'll go back to Q&A?
Sure. So on this same train of thought, how do I get my assets, which for this conversation is our foreign currency, how do I get it into a business trust versus other kinds of trusts?
Well, there are four ways to move assets. You can gift, sell, or exchange or assign them. Statutory trusts are typically grantor trusts, which means you give them to the trust. With the business trust, you exchange your assets.
Oh, boy, that's significant. Once you understand that, it's significant. Exchanging is significant.
Yes.
So what do you receive in the exchange process?
Well, good question, because if you are exchanging, you have to get something back. So when you exchange your assets, in this case your currency, with the creator who puts them into the trust, then gives you $21 consideration, that becomes evidence of the exchange. You also receive 100 trust certificate units. The certificate units are your private property, which give you a right to distribution should there be one. And what's interesting, they become null and void upon your death, so there's nothing there to probate.
Wow. So who is this creator? Does he or she have any say in the trust?
Absolutely not. It's a question we hear a lot. Who is the person? The creator actually has two jobs. One, to effect the initial exchange, and to appoint a suitable adult person as trustee. Seeing that you have given up ownership of the assets, you are eligible to be the trustee. And we feel that if you were the one to accumulate those assets to begin with, who better to become the trustee of them? So typically, the creator affects the exchange, appoints a trustee, and 99.9% of the time, even though it's an arm's length transaction, 99.9% of the time, the creator appoints you, the initial exchanger, as a trustee.
Right. Once you go through the process, this is just my own personal thoughts here, Carol. Once you go through the process of being the creator or even the trustee, it becomes pretty simple once you go through it step by step.
Yes, it is.
It becomes easy to understand.
And, well, Judy, let's let's go through this for a moment. You recently helped me out and became the curator for a for trust client.
Your client.
Yes, and how difficult or how easy was it?
It was exceptionally easy because you had all the instructions. Every page had its little color-coordinated tab to sign. I mean, I'm in Virginia, and he did his. He's a California resident, but he was visiting Virginia, and I'm in Virginia, so I was his creator. And the notary in Virginia can't notarize a page that doesn't have the signatures on it. So she just notarized the signature page. I mean, it couldn't have been easier.
Oh, good.
It was extremely easy. He had two trusts, and we did it in 15 minutes.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. It worked out
and
well.
And he took me to lunch, and we had a glorious time.
And, you know, that's something that I often suggest. As like we said a few minutes ago, in your exchange, the creator gives you $21. Well, let's face it, nobody wants to put anybody out for $21. So I suggest, okay, if John is your creator, give him $21 beforehand, and then he can give you the $21 to put back in the trust, or let him give you the $21, and you can take him out to lunch. You know,
yeah.
Whatever works out. So you're not putting that person out for helping you out. So.
Right. It was a pleasant experience. And the same with me when I did mine. I had the same person was the creator of all of my trusts. And, you know, we're close personal friends. And we had a nice time doing it.
Good.
So can I be the only trustee or must there be more than one person?
Well, the trust must have at least one, obviously, but there may have more. Typically, as a married couple, both spouses become trustees. Sometimes an older person may wish to appoint an adult child as the second trustee. Sometimes, in the case of a married couple, one of them may have health issues and may not want that. You know, the husband may not want his wife to be a trustee because she's got health issues. So he doesn't have to appoint her as a trustee. He can be trustee by himself or have, you know, put one of his kids on there, put his brother-in-law on there. It doesn't matter as long as somebody he's comfortable with to be trustworthy and to be a good trustee.
All righty. Can a successor trustee be changed due to unforeseen circumstances?
Yes, they can, but we haven't gotten to the successor trustee part yet. So let's say you're married, Judy. You and your husband appoint a successor trustee, and that's somebody that takes over when you die, and the business trust is born to live. You know, while you, unfortunately, will pass sooner or later. When
right.
we prepare your trust, we ask that you name at least one successor trustee who will take over when you die. So there's no probate, no inheritance or estate tax, no attorneys. But, you know, your question was, can that be changed? And yes, it can, for whatever reason. You know, you find out if that person is ill, that person is moving to Europe, that person is not going to be available to be your successor trustee for whatever reason. So you can appoint someone else. Just make sure you wait a minute to reflect your actions. And then we can also add a spendthrift clause so future trustees and certificate holders can't compromise.
I really like that a lot. I've been thinking about that personally a lot for the last, ever since Andrew and I talked about his plans, and so I've been giving that a lot of thought about the spendthrift clause. I think it's really important.
Yeah, and we can certainly add that. If any of you have trust now and you think, I think that's a really good idea, just let me know and we can add that clause. We could also add a bloodline succession clause.
Yeah,
if you
that's
desire.
Another one. I like that one a lot.
So it never goes out of your family. So you can appoint your daughter a successor trustee, but she cannot appoint her husband. Because
right.
if something happened to her, then although you love and respect your son-in-law, he is not your bloodline. So
right.
your daughter could be successor trustee, and her children could be successor trustees.
Right.
It always stays within your bloodline.
Yeah, I think that's really important, Carol. Okay, so we talked about, let's recap a little bit. We talked about what occurs in a business trust when a trustee passes. We talked about
Can the successor trust be changed to unforeseen circumstances? So let's go to another little thought here. This applies to me. I live in a high income tax state. I live in Virginia. Can a business trust be legally domiciled in a tax-free state like Wyoming? And if so, how? And then, well, do I have to have banking limited to that state only at the RV, when the RV comes?
I can answer all those questions.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind you can, and you're going to get an A for your answers. I know you.
All you listeners could tell that Judy and I really enjoy each other. But corporations, trusts, and LLCs have often been domiciled in a tax or business-friendly state. It's been common practice for years. We like Wyoming, as there are no state income tax and the requirements to register business trust. And should you choose to do that, we can refer you to the box shop, which will set you up with a street address, which is what we will use for maintaining your EIN for the IRS. If you do live in a state that does not have a state income tax, you can certainly use that state. You know, Florida, Texas, Washington, there are 7 of them. So do whatever you choose. What works for you. And just as you can open a bank, you personally can open a bank account anywhere and probably exchange anywhere, although we heard more about that today, your trust can do the same. It won't be necessary to physically go to Wyoming for these functions.
Let
me interject something here today. This is just off the top of my head, folks. I just read yesterday and again today that our exchange, our redemptions will be done by Federal Reserve District.
Right.
There's 12 districts. You have to exchange within your district. Okay, so even if you do have your trust based in Wyoming, you, the trustee, still live in, let's say, in Virginia.
Right.
So the way I read this, you are going to be required to exchange in your district. So you are in Virginia. You can't call them up and say, okay, I'm in Virginia, but I want to exchange in Washington. I'm not going to let you do that.
If you do that, let's just play that out, Carol. If Judy did that, if say, I live in Virginia, that's my legal residence, but I want to go visit Carol who lives in Washington, and that's where I want to exchange, they'll say no, but they also shove you to the back of the line. So don't do that. Don't do that. Nobody wants to do that. You know, going in, you need
back of the line. That's for sure.
You think, Carol, what do you think about sending to your clients the map? I have access to it.
I have access to it also. It
might be a good idea to get. You have so many people that would be beneficial to.
Yeah, that is a good idea. I'll see if I can do that. Like I say, I don't know how many people are getting my emails these days, but I can give it a shot.
I can't set it up, but if I could, I would.
Before we switch gears.
Okay. Say it again. I'm sorry. I didn't hear the last comment.
One more question. We're at number 19. Okay.
Right. So who owns my business trust?
Well, you just said my, and while we often refer to it as your trust, the business trust is an entity unto itself and thus owns itself. You, as trustee, are the manager. So, once again, you don't own anything. So, as I said, why don't we switch gears here for a minute and answer some questions. I got a hand raised here. So
okay, great, Carol, great.
Anybody else, please *6 to raise your hand. And also, I'd like to introduce my lazy butt webmaster, and he's been promising me his website for weeks now.
So, we're going to call him LB.
LB, there you go. So, hey, Jimmy, could you talk to us for a little bit about the website you're creating for us? There he is. Good morning, Jim.
Listen, I resemble that remark. Proud of it.
It's just meant in fun, LB.
yes. Now, well, the website is up and running, everybody.
You're a good job.
We still have a lot more to do to it. I was on it this morning making some minor adjustments. We I'm going to warn everybody, the site's going to operate a little slower than what we may like, but we are doubled down on the security. And for those that don't know, we had a site up here a while back, and it got crashed by the bugs.
Oh, dear.
And so we're going to be a little more tight on the security. This is a very complex site, and I don't want to have to redo it again. But it is up and running. We have limited content in there. I'm adding content to it every day. Carol and I will be working diligently on that to get it completed in the next probably 2 weeks. But it is running, and we will be sending out invitation codes shortly.
Wow, excellent.
Jim, could you care to explain the invitation codes in the membership module?
Sure. We set this site up so we can control who is in there. You people have paid money for this, no sense giving it away, the information away for free. So we have a way to send you a code, and then we send you this little code, a 6-to-10-digit number, and we'll send them out, and they're only good for 3 days. So when you get this code, you go to the website. The instructions will be there. You go to the website, and then you start the sign-up process. The first thing you'll put in is a username. The second line will be the invitation code. You just drop that invitation code in there. Finish filling it out, and then register. Once that is done, you'll get an email explaining, okay, here's your new password. You go in and you change the password to that, or you use that password. We're going to be very strict on passwords. They must be very complex. I use a program called RoboForm, and it stores all of my passwords. As a webmaster, I have over 250 passwords that I have to maintain. I can't do that on a spreadsheet. It just takes way too long. So I use a little device called RoboForm. It goes into all your browsers, and you can Google RoboForm, RoboForm, and it makes life simple. They have a free version, up to 10 passwords. Over 10 passwords, they want you to buy it. I think it's $20 a year. It's pretty cheap.
It's cheap, yeah.
And it works real well. I've been using it for 6, 7, 8 years, I guess. So once you get the email back from us, then you can log in and you can look at the content. And if you go there without logging in, the only thing you will be able to see is the first few lines of each one of the blog posts. In the upper right-hand corner, there will be a button that you can look at, and I'm pulling it up just a second. It says public content, and it's a one-page overview. So the public will get to see what we're doing, but not how we're doing it, and they will not see the content. So if there is a link there where they can ask to be a member, and that's when they get that question, they'll be, well, sure, no problem, just purchase a couple of trusts. We'll set you right up.
There you go.
So we're trying to control who sees it. We're trying to control the content inside because we've been hacked too many times. Any questions on that?
No, I don't see any.
Okay.
But as Jim mentioned, this is a membership site, and you have paid for this. And what we've designed is for your benefit and for the benefit of this business trust. And one of the concerns is anybody else bought a trust from Joe Blow and they go to this site and they use our information, we can't be responsible for it. So we have put together information that we feel will be useful to you, and it's there, you know, at your discretion whenever you want to use it. So we're very happy about that. So as soon as we get the information from Jim to send out, you'll be getting some emails. So. Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
I'm going to change your name from LB to GJ. Good job.
There you go. That's a good one. All right, we do have a question. Somebody, I'm sorry. Sharon, you have a question. Sharon? I know you've had your hand up for a while. Sharon, can you hear us? I found some people have a hard time with headphones, getting their headphones to work. And let's see, everything should be working. Well, Sharon, if you can get it to work, just come on in, and we'll go from there. In the meantime, nobody else has got their hands up at the moment. So let's go from questions that people have already emailed to me. And actually, some of Sharon's are among them, so maybe we'll answer her question there.
Okay.
You want to start?
Sure, I'll read the questions.
Yeah.
The first one is, we're hearing that our exchange will not be a taxable event. How can I get some money out before it passes through the trust to me, which would be a taxable event?
And this question just came up recently.
Uh-huh.
Because, as I said at the beginning of this call, we are hearing now that this is not going to be a taxable event. Of course, nobody knows it for sure yet. But, you know, I think most of us have issues that we need to address post-RV. Whether it be, you know, outstanding debt, a new car, helping out some friends. We don't want to pay taxes on this money if we don't have to. So one thing that I would suggest, I don't know. I mean, this is all unknown. But at the exchange, how about this scenario? Mr. Banker, I now have X million dollars. I would like you to put $100,000 into my personal account. Here's my account number, wiring instructions, whatever. I would like to take $9,800 cash with me when I leave today, as well as a debit credit card attached to my personal account. I will need these wires to be sent, and here is a list of cashier's checks that I need. I'll need a pass-through account for X number of dollars. I would also like to put the balance into an account at your bank for ABC Trust. Here's my paperwork, and you're going to give them the abstract and EIN. And this is obviously very simplified, but I think you get the idea. So you're going to ask for, if it's not taxable, let's assuming the RV is not taxable, you're going to ask for what you need up front. So you could get rid of that debt, do this, and if you're not paying tax on that money. If you put it in the trust first and then took it out, then it would be taxable to you. So this way, you are just circumventing one step or adding one step. You're taking money out before it goes into the trust. This, to my knowledge, or even to my guess, is the only time you're going to have the opportunity to do that. And if somebody would like to comment on that, if you are a CPA or anybody like that, I would certainly welcome the comment. But, you know, I've talked to a couple people about this and that seems to be the most likely scenario.
Yeah, that's what I intend to do, Carol.
Yeah, it just makes sense to me that we take it out first, not a
yeah.
whole lot. But
yeah, just because we have things we want to do that are personal. And it, for me personally, it lets me go back to the way I used to live, which was I didn't have to worry paycheck to paycheck. I get to breathe for a minute without sitting down and dealing with living out of a trust. It gives me a little breathing time.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
We do have a wireless caller that just popped up right now, so that might be somebody that can give us some direction there. Area code 928.
Yes, I didn't know how to make it work through the computer, so I'm on the phone.
Okay.
Okay, earlier you mentioned to one of the other callers about foundations and trusts and so on, and I used to have a foundation, let it go. But most of mine is going to be more than 15,000 to things. So how do we talk about what's the best way to do that?
I would say that most of yours is going to be more than 15,000. What?
Well, if I were to do it to, I'm just going to throw a couple of general things here. We've got Community Health, Salvation Army, I don't know where, but things that would be nonprofit giving or that type of thing. So do I have to have a trust for each one of them that I choose to give large amounts to? How do I work that?
Well, I did answer this question. I do have that very question that you asked coming up a little bit later, but let's go into it a bit now.
I said, that's what I wanted to know, if there's a way to combine the trust or a specific trust for charitable giving versus just this thing.
Okay. If you are giving to an established 501c3, like you mentioned the Salvation Army, you can give them however much you want. I mean, and that would be a tax deduction for you. If you're planning on building a house for your sister, I would suggest creating another trust for that house and let her be the trustee. Let me finish here for a moment. You have asked this before, and I put it down in one of these questions. If you would just like to give somebody more than $15,000 and you have multiple trusts, each trust can give that person $15,000. You can also take some money out from the very beginning, like we just talked about, and give that person $15,000, and your husband can give them $15,000 as well, individually.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty quick overview. But as I said, I know you've asked this before, and I asked you to write it down. I have addressed this a little bit later on in this call.
Okay. That's because I got my list of things and people, and some are established church groups, and some are people in need of, because of disasters and health and cancer, and what's the best way to help a family who is paralyzed due to an accident and set up something for their children, those types of things.
Okay. We'll see what we can address a little bit later, but once again, I have to remind everybody that I'm not an accountant, and I can only give you my best
opinion.
I would need a trust for each one of them, would they need to have their own trust? I mean, would I have to open up a trust for, the man at church had an accident. He was a youth counselor. He's paralyzed for life. What would I have to do to help that family? The best, is it through you?
In that case, a trust for him might be a good idea. You can fund it on a regular basis. I mean, he's always got the money and nobody can take it from him.
Okay, so we'll talk about it later. However those things work, but maybe other people are in the same position, you know what you can do that's the best way to help us.
Yeah, and I'll give you the best opinion I can come up with. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Carol, just one little aside. While she's learning what's the best for these particular folks, she could give them, as a non-taxable event, a gift of $15,000 a year. At least that would get them started while she's learning what would be the best way to help them.
That's true. And that would be personal?
That's just a thought, yeah.
Yeah.
But at least, pays for the wheelchair.
And she could also gift them some currency.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, if somebody...
Yeah, I've got a gift letter notarized for them.
Good. Okay. So, I mean, that way, if you give somebody some currency, you know you're going to take care of them. It's because there's no determinable value of the currency right now, it's going to be under the $15,000 limit, so it's not going to be taxable to you or to him. And that way, when it exchanges, he will have that money in his own entity, whether he chooses to, take it in his own name, which, of course, I don't go along with, or set up a trust. He will be able to do whatever he needs to do.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Judy, we don't have any more questions right now, so let's see, what number were we on?
We just did one.
Yeah. Okay.
We may have answered this a little bit already, but can I withdraw? The second question that one of your members asked was, may I withdraw any amount at any time for any purpose?
Yes, but keep in mind, anything you withdraw from the trust is taxable to you. If you're thinking of purchasing a big ticket item like a house or even a car, consider borrowing from the trust, which is not a taxable event. Also, if you're planning a trip, make it a business trip so you can write off most of the expenses, pick up brochures, business cards, and the like to back up your business deductions. I strongly suggest you take a trustee salary. It gives you spending money, but then it's taxable to you. And I often say, take a reasonable salary. People say to me, well, what's reasonable? I don't know. What's reasonable to you might not be reasonable to me.
Exactly.
My husband and I, other than this business, are retired. We don't need a whole lot of money. And once we get this RV and the house is paid for, we have a new car and all that kind of stuff, we won't need to take $12,000 a month. Somebody that still has children, still has a family at home, they're going to need more money than we do. So that's all. The salary that you choose to take is what is reasonable for you. Just remember that whatever salary you get is going to be taxable to you.
Okay. The next question is, one of the things on most people's minds is, how do I get money out of my business trust? Let's fast forward 6 or 8 months from now when all the drama and the fireworks are off and we're back to living a normal life. How do I get money out of the business trust?
You have no idea how many times I hear that question.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, and, you know, we try to respond to it, and the answer never really changes very much. But there's actually four different ways. And in the first way is, as I just said, pay yourself a modest, reasonable salary as trustee. And it should be enough to cover your everyday needs, like groceries, utilities, gasoline, medical bills, etc. Not a big deal. The second way is to declare and pay a distribution to the trust certificate holders of the business trust. And that is something that is explained, the distribution is explained in the books that you get with the trust. In either case, this money is taxable income to you.
Right.
So you probably do want to take some money that way and pay a minimal amount of tax. You're not going to fall off the tax records altogether. And regardless of what we hear about the IRS is going to go away or the Federal Reserve is going to go away, we don't know those things yet.
Yeah,
so we can only give you information based upon the information that we have right now. But one of the things my colleague Jim and I have always said is you could also borrow from the trust. A big question for me is, how do I pay off my house or how do I purchase a new property? And, you know, like anything else, there's a couple ways to do this. You could borrow money for the trust, essentially a new mortgage or refi that you control, or the trust could pay off or purchase the property itself. In either case scenario, you still have owning the property in your own name, which is not a good idea if you're trying to keep a low profile. A better option is to obtain a mortgage from the trust, secured with a promissory note, and put the house into a real estate trust. This would be optimal for any larger expenses, and it's not a taxable event because it's a loan. You know, when you got a mortgage for the house that you're in now, did you have to pay tax on it? No, because it's a loan. But you have to back this up with a promissory note. You have to have, you know, proper collateral and security. And, you know, you can use the same method to purchase new vehicles, et cetera. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, just briefly, but don't forget about tax-deductible expenses. So what about vacations and golf and tennis club memberships and all those kinds of things? You know, as a trustee, you're charged with managing and growing your trust, which means you probably want to investigate business opportunities and relationship, does it not? So, you know, most of these expenses are tax deductible for the trust, but just don't go overboard, you know, like anything else, in moderation, right? And regardless of which method or combination of methods you choose, be sure to write the minutes and support your actions.
Yeah.
You must be diligent in keeping the business trust legal and in compliance with federal, state, county and city codes.
And it's easy. It's one or two sentences. It's not a hard deal.
Yeah. And
shouldn't overwhelm people.
Judy, can you just chat for a minute? I've got a call coming in from a client who perhaps cannot get online. So let me...
Oh, sure, of course. What Carol was talking about is making sure that whatever decisions that we make during the course of business or everyday life regarding expenses is you just write a minute. Let's use an example. Went on a trip, went here to such and such a place, spent such and such a money. Here are the receipts. That's a minute. That's it. That keeps you legal. It's just about documenting on your minute page what money was spent out of the trust while you were...
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Sorry. There's Carol.
Okay. Yes. Somebody else that didn't know we were having a call. So anyway.
I just mentioned about minutes relative to helping to inform people about how to write a minute for something that, like, you went on a trip, it's deductible, and you spent this much money, and you write it in a minute. Write it down.
Absolutely. You know, some people have said, well, you don't really need to write minutes. Well, you do.
You do.
Especially, you know, when it comes to tax time, you may need to verify some of these expenses. And this is why you've got a legitimate reason for it. I went to Europe to look for a villa in San Remo, Italy. You know, it's a business expense, right? And also, we're all hoping for this to be a multi-generational trust. The trust itself has a life of 25 years, which can be renewed. But let's say 20 years down the line, you're gone, your successor trustee takes over. They want to know what Aunt Judy did all those years ago.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And that, to me, that's critical because, I mean, that's critical that the meaning and the intent for Judy when she made the trust for generations is that my intentions get honored.
Exactly.
And if they're in writing, then they're honored.
Exactly.
And if they're not, well, God, guess what? I'll be there looking down and I'll throw a wand at them.
There you go.
Just kidding.
So let's go back. I think we're at number 4.
So we have two trusts. I have two trusts. I have more than that. But how can I get money to transfer or gift to my families, relatives, and friends? I have a long list of names and people who are badly in need of help. I plan to provide houses and money to their account. Where will I get the money from the first mother load to the second trust?
Well, actually, this is one of Sharon's questions that she just asked about a little while ago.
Yeah, that's a really serious question.
Yeah, it is. So your trust can do anything a person can do. If you wish to give someone some money, do it from trust number 2. Never from trust number 1, which is your mother-in-law trust. You can give anyone up to $15,000 per year before you're taxed on it. If you want to give them more than that, do it from multiple trusts. And as I said to her, if you want to buy a house for somebody, create a separate trust you fund from the mother load trust and make that person the trustee. You can be his trustee as well if you like. I mean, that's how I would do it. I wouldn't just give
until you find out that they're capable of managing it.
Exactly. I mean, you wouldn't want to just give your nephew a $200,000 home and say, have at it, kid.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So you want to have a little bit of control left in there. But the business trust can pay for medical or educational bills without creating a taxable event. But you have to pay the medical facility directly, or you have to pay the educational institute directly. You cannot give the money to them for them to pay.
Exactly.
Okay. So I know that's Sharon has some very detailed questions, and we really can't go into all those details on a call like this because we're already running out of time. So we'll see what we can do for a few more minutes, okay?
Which ones do you want me to talk to about? Individual gifting tax?
Let's just go as long as we can, and, you know, if it gets to be too late, we'll just cut it off. So we're at number 5.
Okay. So does the individual taxable gifting laws, do they apply if the gift is given from the trust?
To my knowledge, yes. But
yeah, we heard that from a CPA two weeks.
It is a good question for your CPA also.
Yeah. I'm confused regarding the functions between the first trust and the second trust. Please highlight me about this, the mother load and the second trust.
So the mother load is the one that holds the bulk of money. And no one other than you and your banker should ever know about it. So the mother load is going to fund the secondary trust or the third or the eighth or whatever. But their secondary trust can be set up for something specific, like taking care of the family down the street, for buying vehicles, for anything. But the mother load trust is the one that's going to nobody's going to know about. You're not going to have a checking account. I mean, you're not going to have a checking account. You're not going to have a debit card. You're going to transfer money by calling your banker and say, hey, Mr. Banker, transfer $500,000 from ML Trust to 234 Trust.
Okay. So the mother load does not have to have a checking account to do that?
Well, I think it has to have a checking account, but you don't need checks for it that way.
Yeah, okay. Okay. So it does need a checking account, but it's only for the purpose of transferring funds to your other trusts.
Correct. That's a very good distinction. Thank you.
Okay, great. So if I invest in properties and apartments, where will I get the money from? Well, really, you just answered it. One trust or trust number two? Obviously,
yes.
It's the second one.
Yes, obviously. Yeah.
Okay. Here's an interesting question. I have a few ZIMs, all intended for humanitarian projects. Should I get another trust for this for now? Where will I deposit it to?
You know, I was reading a lot today about ZIMs, and there might be a limit on them. You might have to go back and exchange some of them later. But I think a humanitarian, in a case like this, humanitarian trust would best serve you. It's like I said, it's not a 501c3.
Right.
But it is money that you've designated, okay, this is what I'm going to use for my humanitarian projects. So you're not taking it away from your own mother load and things that you want to do. I mean, your mother load is going to fund it, but you're
right.
Not taking it away from the things that you're going to be doing on a regular basis. So if you have the humanitarian trust just for your charitable giving, that should take care of that for you.
Right.
You, obviously, you fund it from the mother load trust and a pastor account to set it up originally. So the mother load does fund it, but that's about it.
So the mother load should exchange the ZIM? Is that what you're saying?
Well, my feeling is we are not going to have the time to set up more than one account when we exchange. I may be wrong, but I keep here an hour, hour and a half, and you cannot set up half a dozen trusts in an hour and a half.
What? Let's use me as an example. I come to the table with five trusts in place. They all have bank accounts. In your opinion, based on your knowledge, will I be able to fund each of those with currency, or will it all currency have to go to the mother load?
I'm thinking, and this is just rationale, and from what I have heard on a few calls, I'm thinking you're only going to have a chance to fund the mother load, and the mother load can then fund the other ones.
I may have to click my heels and pitch a fit.
There you go. Don't do that. They will send you away.
I may have to sweet talk them and blow in their ear because I don't want to put it all. I want to fund some of these trusts with currency. But anyway.
Yeah, but you know you should be able to do that during the course of the following week.
I think so.
I think so.
It doesn't have to be done the first appointment.
Yeah. And you know, guys, this is not going to be a one-shot deal.
Right.
You're not going to go to the bank and exchange. Okay, here's my dinar and my ZIM, and it's, you know, here's, I want the money and I want in this trust, bye, nice knowing you. No. There's a lot of work that's going to need to be done for all this money that you are now responsible for. So you will have wealth managers and bank people to help you out and all kinds of advisors. So this is, once we do this, guys, hey, your work is just beginning. The work is just beginning.
Yeah,
but it will have many rewards.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Let me see. This next question is, will any huge transfers of money to anyone be monitored?
I'm sure that everything we do with this money will be monitored somehow. You know, Big Brother and all that.
I agree.
I've heard that initially any wires over $500,000 may cause a red flag.
Right.
I also read this morning, and I know a lot of you people listen to TNT, and this was right out of TNT's call. I read this morning that Homeland Security has listed people they will not let take part in this, will not let them exchange the currency as they do background checks that will add to that list. Terrorists, drug dealers, scammers.
Yeah, exactly. They're looking for people. It was so interesting on that call, Carol. They said, don't use us because we would never do it, but let's say person Gary, as an example, goes and decides to loan money to a, quote, friend who happens to be a drug dealer, and that becomes a red flag. Gary loses all his money, too.
Exactly, yeah. They're actually going to track you, right, after every
exchange. They're looking for the bad guys. They're not looking to hurt us. They're looking to hurt the bad guys.
Absolutely. And that's a good idea. Take them off the street. Who needs the cabal with more money? We're trying to for them not to have any money. So they are going to track everything after you exchange. If you participate in any illegal activity, partner, friend, family, whatever, they will come after you.
Right.
So gifting is an area anybody you gave money to, they can check on that.
Right, exactly.
There is, if you want to do some separation, you can gift money. I mean, you can gift currency now. If you have small amounts, it's not going to be a big deal. What did I read on that call? The average currency holder has only one 25,000 note?
Yes, that's correct.
So that's not a big deal. But there are so many of us, mostly the people on this call, that have significantly more to that. And like anything else, we need to be careful.
Right.
Cross all the T's, dot all the I's, and, stay on the side of the line. Otherwise, there's a really good chance you're going to lose it. The reason most of you are on this call is because you are going to have to protect this asset somehow. So part of that protection just also means just being smart. So.
Do we have a little more time, Carol?
Yeah, as long as everybody's willing to stay on the call and I don't see anybody hopping off, we can talk for a while.
Well, I think we've pretty much already talked about what are the requirements to transfer from one trust to another if they have different trustees, but it doesn't make any difference.
No.
So here's a good one, in my opinion. Here's an interesting one. It might apply to a lot of us. The question is, most of my peer group is on Social Security, medical disability, even if they simply deposited the currency. This doesn't make sense.
No, but her writing is not real good.
Okay, so let me, I'm sorry, I should have read it. Wow, this, Carol, most of the peer group is on Social Security and medical disability. So even if she deposits the currency in some type of a savings, a CD, or whatever, while they get their trust, game plans, et cetera, into place, will that totally mess up their financial status? And you're answering obviously, but there's one answer, it's yes.
Yeah. I've always recommended that you do not take this money personally.
Right.
Ever in your own name. It will show up.
If somebody's on Social Security and receives maybe not a gift, because that's a non-taxable event.
Right. But her question was, okay, I've got all this money. I'm just going to exchange it in my own name, and then 6 months later I can put it into a trust. Then what happens? Meanwhile, they're on Social Security, or they're on Medicare, or they're on welfare, okay? So this will show up. But here's, and I'm going to moralize a little bit here, and I think, Judy, that's what you were looking at. If you have all this money, you really care about Social Security and other benefits. I mean, my husband and I both collect Social Security. I know a lot of people on this call do. But we paid into the Social Security system. We all have. And I believe all of us, have every right to continue to receive those payments. However, other entitlements, like food stamps, Medicaid, et cetera, have not been earned. And I feel morally should be declined when we have RV money. All our money will be in trust.
Legally, and President Trump is a perfect example, as are all of many of the good guys. It is illegal right now, today, to say, no, I don't want my Social Security check. What isn't illegal and what most of these people do is they simply give it away. If you get $2,000 a month, you give it to somebody. You give it to veterans. You give it to an organization because today you can't say, I don't want it. Because you earned it, you have to accept it.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a fact because I know this from President Trump and many others, Pence and many others. They all accept it. They get it every month, and then every 3 months, every quarter, they give it to a charity.
That's fantastic. It really is. But like I said, these other entitlements, why? Why do you want to take those entitlements when you don't need them? let's put the question of illegal aliens aside, but there are still a lot of people in this country that are hurting. So rather than continuing to deplete those programs,
right,
let the money stay in those programs for the people that really, really need it. And like I'm just moralizing, but you know, whatever you do is your choice. But
I think you're right. I agree with you.
Thank you.
All right. So would it be wise or possible to put 80% to 90% of my children's funds into my existing trust and then move it to the people and places it needs to end up?
Well, I'm assuming that she's talking about their foreign currency, in which
case right.
I would take all of it. You know, why take 80% of it when you take all of it? At that point, you can fund, after your RV, you can fund their trust with the equivalent amount of cash from your own exchange. We have seen lately that if you just have one 25K note or whatever, you can just go to a bank and exchange it. That may be a good way for people to get some money up front. And then they can set up whatever else they need to set up. But yeah, you know, that's how I would do it. In fact, I have people that I'm going to be exchanging for that very reason.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Very
put it in my trust, and when, you know, when all is said and done, and I know how much her $2 million worth of dinar, of Vietnamese dong is, I'll put it into her trust.
Wow.
That's what I'm going to do. So.
That's interesting. Okay. What's your best wisdom on the need to have gift letters of currency notarized before revaluation, since we don't even know the rates? This question's so interesting because it was relevant 4 years ago. Today, or even January 2018, it's not nearly as relevant as it used to be.
Well, why don't you continue?
I'm sorry. I hope you agree with me, but
the bottom line is,
it used to be the gift letter was for income tax purposes. Was it long-term or short-term? Now, because we're being told it's a non-taxable event, it doesn't make any difference where you got the note that you get. Like I gave a note to my FedEx delivery guy. Doesn't make any difference that he has a gifting letter because I gave it to him 4 years ago, and today it doesn't make any difference.
True. Absolutely. But it also gives people a receipt, if you will, of how they got this piece of currency. And, you know, giving people currency stays under the $15,000 taxable limit, and whether it's long-term or short-term. So it must be done and notarized prior to exchange. But after the exchange, the amount would be over $15,000 and taxable to you. And, you know, she's concerned, well, I don't know how much I want to give them because I don't know how much it's going to be worth. Well, you know, sometimes you just got to go with your faith and say, okay, I'm going to give this person $25,000. And, you know, if it winds up to be $25,000 or it winds up to be $100,000, I hope they enjoy it. You know,
right.
You just got to go with the flow. And, you know.
Exactly. I don't have any, personally, I don't have any issue with the countless people that I have gifted foreign currency to in the last, I've been here 12 years, and so I've given a lot to a lot of people. I have zero issue. I don't worry about them. They all know what to do when it's time to do it, and I don't worry about it because I think it's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, her original email says, well, leaving a blank line. You know, I doubt most notaries would notarize anything with blank lines.
They won't.
So
they will
not
even notarize.
So, yeah.
The notary signature has to be on the page of the signatures.
Yes. Okay. There's a really lengthy question, but it's
yes, very lengthy.
I'm going to let you read it.
Thank you, darling. Okay. Here's our question. I purchased a business trust from Jim a few years ago. At the time, I lived in Florida, and the trust is domiciled there because there is no state income tax. I opened two trust checking accounts at Wells Fargo in Florida. I have since moved to Idaho. Here is my question. One of the checking accounts was closed by the bank. They will not allow me to reopen the old account, so I want to open a new one. Wells Fargo is telling me if I want the checking account to be in a Florida account and not an Idaho-based account, I'd have to go back to Florida to reopen it. They said I could have the mailing and physical address for the account be in Florida, but it would show it as having been negotiated or originated in Idaho. Jesus, only Wells Fargo. If I opened it in this manner, I am afraid our government, when it comes to tax treatment time, could say the trust will get taxed in Idaho because of it having a checking account originated in Idaho and because I'm living here as well. I'm trying to avoid any potential gotchas by not having any trust documents or paperwork identified with anywhere but Florida. If I open the account in Idaho but have the mailing and physical address for the checking account in Florida, do you think I will have anything to be concerned about when it comes to paying taxes and filing the trust's tax return in Florida? Woo!
Yeah, it's a long one.
And, I'm glad you know, that's not me.
I tried to edit it, but there's a lot of good things here.
A lot of good things there. It's real.
Yeah. So, but personally, I don't think that's an issue. You, the trustee, live in Idaho, but the trust is still domiciled in Florida. And, you know, I understand Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo is open and closed and open and closed and open and closed. So many accounts through this
me
process
too.
For whatever
I've had
reason.
Happen.
Yeah. So just like we send people to Wyoming or people open corporations or LLCs in Delaware or Nevada, the domicile of the entity is the issue, not the location of the bank that you choose. And as we were talking about earlier, we understand we're all going to be sent to the district, the Federal Reserve District in which we live. Okay, don't forget, you live in Idaho, but your trust still is domiciled. Your trust still lives in Florida, so your trust will be subject to Florida's taxation, not Idaho.
The key that from what I'm taking away from this, and I completely agree with you, but her question was, Wells Fargo is telling me if I want the checking account to be in a Florida account and not Idaho-based account, I'd have to go to Florida to open it.
Yeah.
I opened a Nevada bank account for my Nevada corporation 10 years ago over the phone.
Yeah.
Now, that's 10 years ago. Things might be a little different now, but maybe she needs to go to somebody other than Wells Fargo or go to a different teller.
Yeah. And also...
And if she does, well, it's a plane ride, so go there for the day.
And also, I just lost it for a moment here.
We were talking about Wells Fargo telling her she'd have to physically go to Florida.
Exactly. Over the years, as this is, Wells Fargo's opened and closed so many accounts that I've lost count.
Right.
When you go to your exchange, let's say you do go to Wells Fargo for your exchange, your information is already there in your system.
Exactly.
I'm telling people now for new trust clients, I wouldn't even bother to open an account right now.
Right.
We still don't know how long this is going to be.
Exactly.
I easily say hundreds of thousands of dollars have been lost by bank fees for accounts that people don't use because they're just waiting for this to happen.
Right.
You're already in the system. I wouldn't worry about it. And that's just my personal opinion, but I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah. And if for some reason somebody gives you a hard time, then get up, walk away, and go to another person.
Exactly.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Okay, so the next question is, will we need separate EINs for secondary trust accounts if there's a checking account associated with it?
Yes. I mean, each trust needs its own EIN for banking purposes. Just like I can't use your Social Security number to open a bank account for me.
Right.
You can't use the same EIN for different trusts. So I don't think we'll be allowed, as I said, at the time to open more than one trust account on our initial visit. And it's best to plan on it later that week. But every trust that is going to have a banking purpose needs its own EIN.
Okay. Are we correct that the mother lode account should be in a non-interest-bearing checking account with no checks and only a debit card associated with it? If so, why not interest-bearing?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about this issue.
Right.
You know, we all talked about NIB accounts. And you know that I'm not an accountant, so I can only tell you a little bit about what I've heard.
Right.
I know, I believe TNT has said recently it doesn't have to be NIV.
Right. In my opinion, they're wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
They're wrong.
The NIV account is for your protection.
Exactly. It also is about taxing. If you have a non-interest-bearing account that you've exchanged all this foreign currency into, it is non-taxable to the government. If it starts earning money, it puts it in a new category.
Right. And then it goes, yeah. And then you do have to pay tax on the interest.
Exactly.
But, you know, banks must report all new accounts, but not interbank transfers. Using a non-interest-bearing account protects by transferring to secondary accounts protects you from hackers. You know, it also makes wiring in between accounts easier with NIB.
Yes.
I have a document that explains all this pretty well, and I've mentioned it to you before. I got it from some gal named Deb Tarheel Girl, and I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with her name.
Yes,
she sent out something several years ago that was written by a former Treasury agent.
Right.
So I figure he knows what he's talking about. So if you want a copy, just let me know, and I'll send you one. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Carol.
Well, Judy, we haven't lost anybody yet, so let's hang on.
They love hearing us. Okay, so the next question is the purpose of the written wire instructions on a bank letterhead to help legally facilitate wire transfers to another institution due to large sums being transferred?
That's an interesting question. As you know,
interesting.
I'm sorry, Judy?
I wonder where she got that information.
Oh, I'm going to explain it.
Okay.
When I send out your trust, I also give you instructions on how to open a bank account. And
right.
One of the things on the instructions is get wire instructions and bank letterhead.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know about legally facilitating the wire. It's just making sure it goes to the right bank and account. And, you know, I've had a couple of banks do that for me. Wells Fargo would not. With Wells Fargo, you get your basic hello information, and their wire instructions are right in there. It's not on letterhead with your name and account number on it, but it's Wells Fargo and all the correct information, and after that, you put your own account number. It's not a legal requirement. It just makes things a little easier, that's all.
A little smoother. Okay. The next question is, if we currently have an art collection with significant value, should we have a branch trust account set up for it now along with other non-real property items?
I would say so. And, you know, if people look at the multi-trust diagram, these branch trust accounts, and that is not designed necessarily for me to sell more trust, but for you to keep track of your property. And, you know, this particular person has an art collection. Somebody else may have a gun collection. You don't necessarily want to commingle those assets with other assets. So you can set up a trust just to hold the art. And it does not have to have an EIN number. It doesn't have to have a bank account. It just owns the art. Same thing with jewelry.
So that's what you call a branch trust account.
Yeah, it's still a secondary account. Yeah.
A secondary account,
yeah.
Okay. Secondary to the mother lode?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, next question. Currently, we think there will not be any taxes issued on revalued currency or somehow taken care of at the exchange institution. However, if this is not the case, will we need to set up a branch trust account to pay the taxes?
No, just a separate bank account under the mother lode would be fine. And at the very beginning of this call, we talked about that in terms of, well, we're hearing right now it's not going to be a taxable event.
Right.
We have heard before that, you know, put some money away aside for taxes. I think until the banker shows me something in writing that this is not going to be a taxable event, I'm going to set up a bank account underneath the mother lode account, just set aside for taxes.
It's just simply a savings account that you don't touch it for taxes in the
exactly.
event.
Exactly. That does not need to be a separate trust.
Okay, great. If there are taxes levied, will future cash disbursements to trustees be tax-free? That's an interesting question.
Disbursements to the trustees are always taxable to the trustee. And the amount paid to the trustee is a deduction to the trust, however, so it's not double taxation as if it would be in some other entities.
Okay. We have heard that we should have a separate account for the dinar apart from other currencies. Does that mean another trust?
The important word here is account. One business trust can own several bank accounts, so the answer would be no. However, you can have additional trust if you feel you want to set it up that way. Like, Judy, for instance, you have several accounts. You can have several trusts. You can put all of your dinar in one, all of your Vietnamese dong in another, all of your Zim in another one. They can all be in separate trusts. I mean, I plan on doing the same thing down the road myself.
Right.
But for those of you that only have one trust right now, and actually, I don't think we're going to be able to open more than one trust that day anyway, more than one trust account that day. So it's just a different account. And the trust can have as many bank accounts and as many banks and locations as you feel appropriate. Now, personally, we will have a motherlode trust account at several different banks. We need to spread this out, folks. And
diversify, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the motherlode can have 5 bank accounts?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Excellent. Good question, good answer. I'm giving you an A, Toots.
Thank you, sweetie.
What other estate planning services do you provide, Carol?
Well, as I said before, estate planning is more than just taking care of the money. There are some other things to be considered as well. So we offer the triple play, which consists of a pour over will, which simply says that anything you own personally at the time of your death pours over into the trust that you name. Now, I just had an instance where the gentleman that I did a pour over will for had property in a different country. I don't know how to handle that.
Wow.
So, I mean, his widow got a local attorney involved. I'm sure they're getting it straightened out. I'm just giving you a little caveat here. If it's real property in a different country, I can't handle that. So,
wow.
I'll be aware of that. But we do also include a durable power of attorney. There's times you can't take care of business yourself. You may be in another country. You may, for whatever reason, you may not be able to take care of your own business. So your designated power of attorney can do that for you. And we also have a health care directive, which is very important, especially as we get older. I'm sure many of you are aware, if you go to the doctor now anymore, they ask you if you have a health care directive. They can ask for your insurance card, your health care directive.
Right.
So this way it's all taken care of. You're not just giving somebody a blanket agreement that they can take care of you. With the health care directive, you make the choices of what you want to happen in a particular situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. The triple play is very reasonably priced. It's $275 for a single and $350 for a couple, and it typically doesn't take me very long to do. It's really a good part of the inexpensive part of the package.
Exactly. Even now these days, if you go to the hospital and you have to have any kind of, if you have an endoscopy, which is sort of general anesthesia, they won't do it unless you have a healthcare directive. Now it's simply for that particular procedure, but you have to have it.
Exactly. Everything you do, if you go to the emergency room, you have to sign something to give them. The right to treat you.
Exactly. Well, and because if anything goes wrong, then they need to know what you want them to do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, well, I think, Judy, we've done a phenomenal job today, if I do say so for both of us.
I hope all of our listening guests agree.
I hope so, too. But
they're still with us, so they probably do.
As a little recap, our business trusts are well priced, only $14.95 for new clients and $11.95 for additional trusts to family members. We also offer 20% referral fee for any fully paid new trust. I'm here, my telephone, I'm going to give you my phone number and email in a moment. I think we are at, we're knocking at the door, folks. I would suggest again that you be ready. Don't think about getting ready. You need to be ready. So the time for action is now. You know, Judy, thank you so much for your able assistance today.
My pleasure, Carol. Always my pleasure. I enjoy working with you.
Well, thank you. Oh, and thank you, Jim, for explaining the website to us. And it looks like we have a caller here.
Yay. We love callers.
Yeah. Hey, Ralph, how are you doing today?
There's no question. This is Ralph calling. Just want to say, yeah, I agree with you. You both did an excellent job. Hi, Carol.
Thank you.
Hi, Ralph.
Do you have a question at all, Ralph, or that was just your comment?
You did an excellent job.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Bye. So thank you all for your attendance and attention. I look forward to hearing from you soon. I'm available by telephone at 425-820-8090. My email is hopeisworking.info@indicatorinformation.com. It's INDICATOR, information.com. As Jim mentioned, that website is now up and running, but you need an invitation. As soon as I get that information from him, I will pass it on.
Yay!
Anybody else? No, I don't think anybody else has any questions. There are no hands up, so it's an hour and a half, folks. I really do appreciate your attention. So look forward to hearing from you soon. Take care. Have a good weekend, and go RV!
Go RV! Thank you, everybody. Have a nice weekend. Bye-bye, Carol, honey.
Bye-bye, sweetie. Bye.
Bye.